Welcome to the Horror Babble Originals podcast. The Lore of the Dreamscape by Ian Gordon. Part 3. The Noble Act. As Murphy fell from the open sky, a majestic silence enveloped him. Though gravity drew him down, pulling his body ever closer to the green landscape below, he felt no fear. A startled rabbit caught a glimpse of the falling figure, then scurried into the undergrowth, the only witness to his graceful arrival on the sprawling carpet of grass. And graceful it was. The young man came to rest on his back, like a feather dropped from the heavens. Far above him, he could just about make out the floating picture frame through which he'd leapt. Was that a small hand that waved from within? A hand belonging to his younger counterpart, perhaps? He returned the gesture, then climbed to his feet in order to get a better look at his surroundings. The scene was quite beautiful. Rolling hills met Murphy's gaze, host to towering oaks and leaf-strewn horse chestnuts. Clusters of bluebells dotted the plains, gently bobbing in the breeze, a breeze that appeared to be puffing in a very particular direction. 7 pure white doves briefly eclipsed the sun, obeying the allure of that gentle wind. They flew towards a distant spire, nestled in the reaches of a wide valley between the hills. The waning sunlight reflected from the spire's shiny apex, indicating a route towards it through a patch of woodland in the vale. High above, a group of mischievous clouds raced across the sky, blotting out what remained of the fading sun. The valley was plunged into shadow, but the young man wasn't deterred. The stranger he had glimpsed atop the hill in the painting was nowhere to be seen. But Murphy felt certain that he would catch up to the man in the hat if he followed the wind. Enjoying the sensation of the soft grass beneath his bare feet, he took off in quest of the now hazy spire. Darkness gathered as Murphy entered the vale. The trees surrounding him loomed like scarecrows, their awkward limbs outstretched like gnarled, pointing fingers urging him onwards. And through the branches the gentle wind shrieked like the desperate screech of a dying owl. The woods grew darker and darker till all was monochrome, a realm of shade through which the young man tiptoed, becoming increasingly aware of a presence to his rear. Were eyes upon him? He couldn't be sure, but a handful of paces ahead he perceived a substantial clearing, in which the spire, a golden tower amid a huddle of indistinct houses, awaited him. Stepping into the clearing, the man in the black t-shirt observed a number of candle-lit lanterns on the verge of burnout, indicating the perimeter of what appeared to be a small village. Despite the onset of night, aided by the relentless clouds above, the village was calm and inviting. The nagging impression of eyes on his back had departed for the time being, leaving him free to ask of nobody in particular. Where am I? The houses dotted about were little more than log cabins, with thatched rooftops and barn-style sliding doors. Oval windows adorned the dwellings, dark curtains masking their interiors. Penetrating the rooftops were stone chimneys, coughing plumes of white smoke into the air. Murphy counted a dozen houses in all, through the middle of which, ending at the golden spire, ran a gravel pathway. The young man stepped onto the path, contemplating the strange street lamps lighting it, wooden posts crowned with candles, thick with wax dripping. Looking up at the imposing spire, Murphy was humbled by it. At the base of the structure was a wooden door, above which the young man saw once again 2 cutlasses, one across the other, forming an X, just as he'd seen above the entrance to the theatre in New Babylon. Sanctuary, he mumbled, as though the meaning of the symbol was exactly that. Halfway up the spire, aligned with the oaks at the clearing's perimeter, Murphy studied the plain clock face situated there. Unmoving, the large hands displayed 7 minutes past 11. Two sinister-looking cherubs were positioned astride the clock face, their stony eyes fixed on the frozen hands. At the top of the golden steeple sat another ravenous-looking gargoyle, just like the one he'd given audience to in the heart of New Babylon. Murphy heard voices. From where the sounds issued, the young man couldn't be certain, but he turned his attention to the nearby houses and saw ruffling curtains, the hidden occupants therein suddenly interested in his coming. The inaudible muffling continued unabated for several seconds, whilst the denizens of the cabins retreated from their oval windows and shuffled towards their fireplaces. Immediately thereafter, the billowing plumes of smoke ceased, and arose instead the unified voices of a dozen villagers, chanting as follows. A quiet boy roamed a quiet town. His thoughts were sound, his daydreams loud. The quiet boy met quiet souls. A noble act made the quiet boy whole. All fell silent. Turning to examine the clock face, Murphy saw that the hands remained stuck at 7 minutes past 11. The candlelit street lamps had grown dim, badgered as they were by an expanding haze. Perplexed by the verse of the villagers, the young man proceeded along the gravel pathway, wincing with every step as the rough stones came into contact with his bare feet. Reaching the spire's wooden door, the man in the black t-shirt observed a strange spectacle. The crossed cutlasses above the door began to melt. The molten metal ran in a stream down the front of the door, following a network of grooves along its surface. Terminating in the middle of the door, it solidified again, forming the unmistakable shape of a human hand. The silver hand was situated as one inviting a handshake might proffer a palm, open and enticing. Murphy approached the hand and shook it. Instantly, the metal hand disintegrated and fell to the floor. Then, the wooden door, of its own volition, opened inwardly, revealing a tenebrous space beyond. Tentatively, Murphy entered the structure, mindful of the oppressive silence pervading it. His footsteps made the slightest of sounds as he crept across the cold, stone floor into what resembled the nave of a church. Outlandish frescoes adorn the windowless walls. Huge, iridescent spheres pursuing terrified men and women across barren cityscapes. Monstrous, crab-like creatures guzzling marine life from massive lake beds. And gaunt, emaciated human beings suspended from the branches of crooked trees, begging for death. Shuddering, the young man averted his gaze from these horrors. Passing a number of empty pews, Murphy approached a raised pulpit at the far end of the nave. Climbing its short flight of steps, he mounted the podium and discovered a dusty volume lying open on the bookstand. The book, untitled as it was, concerned a race of people known as the Tenetors. Occupants of the great realm of Garty, the Tenetors were wiped out following a bizarre event involving the coming of a mysterious stranger. The stranger was a woman, went the text, a woman in possession of a strange machine. She offered the machine to the Tenetors as a gift. Freeing herself of it, the woman promptly disappeared, leaving the Tenetors to agonize over the nature of the thing. An elder, by the name of Bakron, proposed the notion that the stranger's gift was intended to aid in the Tenetor's technological advancement. And so, a young scientist called Treathen was employed to reverse-engineer the little black box. "Her name was Pimpernella," came a voice from across the nave. Murphy, startled, looked up. His eyes narrowed, searching for the source of the voice. She descended into an ancient sanctum to rouse the old ones, sounded the voice again. But she wasn't prepared for what she disturbed down there. The old ones took control of her, infused the little black box with the verminous dark ones, and drove her to commit a terrible act of iniquity. "Who are you?" Murphy called, seeing only the suggestion of a person in the far, hazy recesses of the nave. "A friend," answered the man in the shadows, stepping into the light. "Do I know you?" the young man begged, sensing recognition on some level. "I'm here to help, Jason," said the man with the gaunt face, his eclectic dress suggestive of a character from a Hammer horror movie. "The name's Peter. Peter Van Melsen." Murphy searched his memory. Though he was sure he'd never seen the man's face before, he was sure he'd heard his voice before. But where had he heard it? "Where did you come from?" the man in the black T-shirt asked, watching the approaching figure closely. "To coin a phrase, it's a long story," Van Melsen stated, offering the young man in his midst a broad, toothy grin by way of reassurance. "But if you'll give me the time of day, I'll do my best to bring you up to speed." Nodding, Murphy collected the untitled book and descended from the pulpit. "Let's head outside," the investigator suggested. "One of the villagers has very generously offered to brew us a pot of tea."
"Tea? Here?" blurted the young man.
"You'll find there's little you need to go without round here, Jason. It's just a case of adapting to the environment." Wide-eyed and mystified, the man in the black T-shirt approached the man in the long black overcoat, and together they went after that much-needed pot of tea. Murphy sat facing the mysterious Peter Van Melsen in the quaint living room of an elderly lady by the name of Hilda. The senior had rushed out to greet the PI, convinced he was a former resident of the village, absent for generations. Unfortunately for Hilda, though, it was a simple case of misidentification. Still, she'd greeted the stranger warmly, inviting both him and the man to whom the villagers had recited a traditional verse for tea.
"Welcome to Moppen,"
Hilda said, pouring a cup of pine needle tea for the barefooted man.
"What happened to your shoes?"
she asked, an expression of befuddlement across her wrinkled visage. Left home without them," Murphy returned, shrugging.
"You'll catch your death,"
the old lady stated, returning a shrug of her own. Waving the cup of hot tea under his nose, she added,
"Better drink this."
Then, turning to the grinning, gaunt investigator,
"And I don't know what you're smirking at, mister. That pasty face of yours could do with a spot of colour."
It was Van Melsen's turn to shrug. As Hilda shuffled away, the PI turned to Murphy, who was still clutching the untitled book he'd retrieved from the spire. "That machine you were reading about, the little black box," the investigator began. "I have it in my possession." The young man looked up, evidently intrigued.
"Really?"
"Indeed," Van Melsen confirmed. "Without it, I wouldn't have known what it was you were reading."
"You have it with you?" Murphy pressed.
Van Melsen hesitated. "Well, sort of."
"Sort of.
It's complicated."
"Isn't everything?" the young man stated, shaking his head.
Sipping his tea gingerly, the investigator nodded at the book on Murphy's lap. "The young scientist, Treathan," Van Melsen said, "ultimately failed in his attempts to reverse engineer the strange machine. He did, however, prior to the black light event, as it was afterwards termed, suggest that there might be a way to open it. Treathan succeeded in this regard, which disastrously unleashed the Dark Ones, resulting in the elimination of his people."
"How do you know all this?" Murphy ventured.
"The box, Jason," the investigator stated carefully. "It communicates with me. I've learned a great deal from it,
though I sense that the information it chooses to convey is directly linked to my current objective. What is your objective? Murphy begged, sipping his tea. To guide you out of here, Jason. Why? I chose to come here. True, Van Melsen admitted. Though, isn't it also true that you haven't the slightest clue as to where you are and why you chose to come here? The young man nodded as memory fragments floated to the fore of his consciousness, bits of half-remembered dreams in which he would wander unending plains in search of some mysterious prize, guided by the disembodied voice of a stranger. The recollections disturbed him, felt far too familiar as he looked upon the face of the gaunt individual in his midst, and that was the source of the stranger's familiarity. Not too long ago, Van Melsen had been in his head. "Have you any idea how long you've been here?" the investigator quizzed. The man in the black T-shirt shook his head. "A day? Half a day?" he muttered. "Feels like forever." "You've been here for years, Jason," the investigator stated. "Over a decade, in fact." "What?" Murphy exclaimed, almost spilling his tea. "You disappeared in 2004. It's 2018 now." The young man simply shook his head in bemusement. Van Melsen commented, "A long day out in the dreamscape, eh?" The conversation between the young man and the investigator continued, Murphy doing his best to outline the nature of the strange dreams that had resulted in his happening upon the dreamscape, and Van Melsen attempting to plunder the depths of the dreamer's subconscious in order to fish out the details pertaining to the mysterious four steps. "If we're to succeed in getting you out of here," Van Melsen said, "we need to know what those other steps are. There are four, Jason. The first two provided a means for you to cross over. Stands to reason steps 3 and 4 might provide a way back." Then in walked Hilda, her eyebrows raised.
"Blimey,"
the old lady started.
"Seems you've got to spell it out to some folk."
"Excuse me," Van Melsen returned.
"Listen,"
Hilda continued, ogling Murphy.
"A quiet boy roamed a quiet town. His thoughts were sound, his daydreams loud. The quiet boy met quiet souls. A noble act made the quiet boy whole."
"A noble act," Murphy repeated, his eyes wide. "I remember now. Peter, I remember. Step 3, the noble act. There are those in need of your help. Assist them. This does relate to getting out of here. I'm sure of it." Nodding, the old lady pointed at the untitled book sitting on the young man's lap.
"It's all in there, young man,"
she said, then shuffled away again. "The Tenators," Van Melsen put in. "How can you assist a vanished race?" Eagerly, Murphy opened the book and leafed through its weighty pages. He read as follows. "The strange machine put an end to the great realm of Garty. Buildings turned to coal, people to dust. Skies darkened. A charred wasteland, Garty's marvellous skyscrapers were reduced to scorched lumps. Meadows flat and featureless, lake beds dry and cracked. Only the citadel remained, a wonder at the heart of a dead world." Murphy paused, seeking comfort in his pine needle tea. "Visitors to this dead place," he continued, "speak of the realm's new inhabitants, beings that have come to be known as the Dark Ones. They live in Garty's murkiest corners, its shadows, its derelict, windowless ruins. One would be foolhardy to plunder the citadel, for that surviving bastion of the Tenators is assuredly home to a veritable horde of fiends." Abruptly, Van Melsen jumped to his feet, spilling tea all over the place. Oblivious to this blunder, he addressed Murphy prudently. "That's it, Jason," he began. "Garty, the citadel. That's where it happened, where Treathan opened the box." Murphy frowned, returning, "I don't follow." "The noble act," the PI continued, pacing back and forth now. "You must enter the citadel and retrieve the little black box. Doing so will restore the tenetus, restore the great realm of Garty."
"Wait, I don't understand," Murphy declared. "I thought you were in possession of the box."
"I am," Van Melsen stated, resuming his seat, "but not here in the dreamscape. Listen, I know this doesn't make a lot of sense, but I believe your acquisition of the box will bring us a step closer to dragging you out of this place."
"How can you possibly know that?" the young man begged.
"Because it speaks to me. It's in constant communication with me."
"Can it be trusted? I haven't a clue, but that isn't important.
What is important is that you get your hands on the version of it that resides here in the dreamscape, before that man in the hat does."
Murphy's eyes widened. "Who is he?"
"I'm sorry, Jason," the PI said, grimacing. "I'd hoped to get you out of here before bringing him up. I don't know who he is, but if this thing in my possession speaks sincerely, then it's possible that the man in the hat is looking to trade places with you. It's very likely that he's seeking a conduit through which to manifest himself on Earth. Why? I can't answer that. But I think that now you're here in the dreamscape, all he needs to do is locate the little black box in order to cross over, trapping you here permanently."
Murphy scowled and swallowed audibly.
There was a moment of silence before the 31-year-old finally plucked up the nerve to ask, "What have I got myself into here?" The investigator simply shook his head and took a sip of what remained at the bottom of his teacup. "If you gaze long enough into an abyss," Van Melsen quoted, "the abyss will gaze back into you." Murphy sighed, rubbing his greasy forehead. "My presence here is to your advantage, though," the PI continued, smiling. "With my guidance, I'm sure we can pip this character to the post. I doubt he was banking on the likes of me showing up to assist you. Dozens of people back home have a vested interest in your safe return. Some have been searching for you for years." The young man nodded, a look of optimism filling his features.
"Where do we begin?" he asked.
"We follow the wind," the investigator stated with confidence, climbing to his feet. And, thanking the elderly lady, Hilda, for her courteousness, Jason Murphy and Peter Van Melsen strolled out onto the quiet streets of Muppen. Tasting the night air, it was immediately apparent to the young man and the investigator which direction the wind was blowing. Beyond Muppen and its golden spire, beyond the dark woods, beyond the murky hills. "You must head north, Jason," Van Melsen declared, pointing towards a great peak, at the top of which a faint arc of light illumined a solitary tree. "And I'm afraid I can't go with you." Murphy glowered, searching the investigator's gaunt face for an explanation. "The noble act," Van Melsen continued. "It must be yours, and yours alone." Understanding dawned, and the young man nodded. "Once I have it, if I make it that far, that is," Murphy began. "What then?" "You must find a means of escape. It's my firm belief, though, that the little black box will aid you in this respect."
"Has it aided you in coming here?" Murphy questioned.
"Precisely," the PI returned, sifting through the front pocket of his velvet blazer for a cigarette. "Listen," he said, lighting his unearthed prize. "The sun, or whatever passes for a star here, is rising over Garty. The great realm is located beyond that tree there on the hill. You must reach the citadel before darkness falls again. You can't miss it. It's the only building still standing. Go now. Don't turn back. And most importantly, keep to the light. The shade is home to the dark ones." A look of cautious curiosity washed over Murphy's face.
"I might regret asking this, but," he began, "what exactly are
the Dark Ones. Phantasms, Van Melsen declared coldly. The festering progeny of the Old Ones. Spectres, whose sole purpose is to engender death and decay in the name of their creators.
And the Old Ones? The man in the faded jeans breathed. A discussion for another time, Jason.
Okay, he managed through gritted teeth. Then, with some hesitation, I suppose I'd better be on my way.
Be vigilant, Jason, warned the investigator, eyeing him intently.
Nodding, the young man turned and took off along the gravel pathway, ignorant of the rough stones under his bare feet.
I'll find you afterwards, the PI called. Mark my words.
By way of acknowledgement, Murphy waved a quivering hand, his thoughts acutely focused on the task at hand. Who the mysterious investigator truly was and what he was really after were notions the 31-year-old would have to push to the back of his mind for the time being. It was odd, though. Somehow he felt that the investigator could be trusted, that the gaunt chap had his best interests in mind, that he genuinely wanted to assist him. The being, Gertrude, had said, "Look to he who has come for you." It was clear now that Gertrude had made a reference to Peter Van Melsen. As for the other character the gaunt chap had spoken of, the elusive man in the hat, Murphy wasn't so sure. What would it mean for him to end up trapped in the dreamscape? What had he hoped he would find here? An escape from the trappings of everyday life? A mundane life that had driven him to the brink of despair? There were too many unanswered questions. Questions that, if he didn't succeed in his current task, might never be answered. The very thought of failure spurred him on, and through the murky woods he trod at speed, drawn to the solitary tree at the top of the towering hill, clearly lit now by a large orange sun. Up the hill he went, doggedly, driven forward by the notion of a way out, a return to mundanity. The young man pondered the irony as his bare feet flattened fallen leaves and blades of grass. Back home, mundanity had been his undoing. Here in the dreamscape, facing the very real possibility of becoming a prisoner with no chance of parole, mundanity was a cause worth fighting for. Cresting the tree line, he pushed harder, the tree above the focus of his efforts. Fatigue was upon him. It was as though he'd been climbing the hillside for hours, and the environment was changing. Where before he'd trod upon soft, yielding grass, the ground beneath his bare feet was now cracked and dry. The smattering of trees he passed were crooked and bare, and although above the sun still shined, a veil of dense mist shielded the majority of its light, reducing visibility dramatically. The blackened turf beneath his feet was akin to sodden charcoal. Every step he took unearthed wiry roots and festering insects. But Murphy ploughed ever onward in pursuit of the solitary tree. When at last he reached the top of the hill, the young man collapsed beneath the tree. It was the ghost of a tree, really. Skeletal limbs riddled with moss, a trunk hollowed by lightning. But it was a goal attained, as far as Murphy was concerned, an opportunity to rest. And there he sat, supported by the gnarled trunk, breathing rapidly. He looked out across the valley from which he'd climbed, saw the golden spire and the huddle of houses, the broad forest surrounding Muppen, all bright and verdant. Quite the contrast to his present surroundings. The hilltop the young man had attained was perfectly flat, a considerable stretch of boggy soil. Looking northward, as indicated by the subtle breeze, Murphy beheld a significant pale glow, the source of which lay beyond the swampy plain. A drop of rain touched his cheek, then another, and another. Within a matter of seconds, the dark clouds that had gathered above positively burst, unleashing a downpour of biblical proportions. Murphy climbed into the hollow of the tree, seeking the partial shelter it offered. Protected by the withered skeleton, The young man watched as the boggy plain transformed under the influence of the heavy downpour. It was tar-like now, a black, feculent pool, flat and animated by the rain. And just as quickly as it started, the rain stopped, leaving in its wake a smooth, black surface, resembling a newly tarmacked stretch of road. Murphy emerged from the relative safety of the hollow tree, and, with a twig snapped from the trunk, tested the integrity of the new surface. The swampland was now indeed a solid surface, a road to Gati. This, as evidenced by the view to the north, the source of that pale glow now revealed with the passing of the dark clouds. The man in the black T-shirt crossed the swath of asphalt at speed, seeking the edge of the hill, a position from which to behold the once great realm of Gati. Reaching the desired spot, the orange sun exposed an uncannily familiar scene. Murphy recalled an image. The painting he'd laid his eyes on in the theatre, the picture on the stage, labelled Manifestation. At first, the painting had depicted the simple landscape into which he'd recently plunged, but then he'd watched as it changed before his eyes, becoming a sprawling cityscape, withered and dead. And that was the scene before him now, figures that might have been men impaled on pillars of scrap metal, shapes that might have been buildings rising from piles of accumulated debris, black towers looming in the background like lifeless sentinels above shadowy decay. And at the center of the nightmarish scene stood the mighty citadel, an immense tower, its dark, lofty facade calling to the young man, just as it had on the stage of the theater. Once more, the young man felt that he needed to be there, standing at the foot of that unlikely structure. And now he knew why he needed to be there. In an abstract kind of way, the young man was beginning to make sense of his situation. Past events had foreshadowed present events, influencing his journey through the dreamscape. "Onwards and upwards," the young man muttered, continuing towards the realm of decay below. The asphalt road made for a smooth descent into Gati. With every step, the ominous realm seemed to close in about him, enveloping his being. On reaching Gati proper, the horror of the scene was initially lost on the young man. His eyes didn't want to see. His mind refused to acknowledge the scale of the devastation. Hundreds of bodies littered the blackened highways, forms little more than insipid mannequins, limp depictions of terror, madness, and death. Resisting the urge to vomit, Murphy closed his eyes, inching along the derelict street in a blind stupor. But he couldn't maintain a state of sightlessness indefinitely, and so, giving in to a terrible temptation, he glanced about him like a manic fly, drawn to and yet repelled by the wreckage surrounding him. As he went, the man in the black T-shirt couldn't shake the notion that the great realm of Gati was the city of New Babylon in an aged state. Back there, he'd seen bodies cluttering the streets, walked amongst them, frozen in time. But it wasn't the same place. It couldn't be. Could it? "Better not to think about it," he mumbled, mindful of the debris beneath his feet, sharp stones, metal fragments and broken glass. It was a miracle he'd made it this far without so much as a scratch. The orange sun above did a poor job of lighting the way, but it afforded Murphy just enough illumination to navigate the desolate streets in the direction of the citadel. A grey, low-lying mist dominated the highways. It made for a humid atmosphere that was mildly suffocating. Fearful of airborne viruses, he tore a strip of fabric from his sleeve and wrapped it around his nose and mouth. The post-apocalyptic vision was complete, a masked stranger amid streets of devastation, in pursuit of something weird yet assuredly wonderful. Nearing the citadel, that great black tower at the center of the carnage, the young man found himself approaching a narrow passageway, a sinister alley between two crumbling walls. The route was dark, but, unfortunately for the seeker of the box, it was the only means of accessing that which he sought. Clutching the mask about his face, he stepped into the passage. The young man immediately realized the error of his ways. The alley was far too dark for a loner. He was vulnerable in there, visible to those rumored to occupy the shadows. In fear, he ambled forth like a drunk, stumbling into unseen objects, negotiating invisible hazards. Suddenly, something gripped his shoulder, something cold and moist, not quite a hand, a claw, perhaps. Icy breath assaulted the nape of his neck, producing goose flesh. Murphy shut his eyes, redirecting his thoughts, searching for pleasant reveries and enticing fantasies. But the withered claw tightened its grip. Brittle fingernails sank into flesh. A bead of sweat appeared on the young man's forehead, a prelude to panic. His dainty thoughts were too meager to detract from the reality of his situation, and the noxious claw, its owner sensing Murphy's ailing resolve, tightened its grip further still. And then it spoke. "Feast upon you," came the hoarse tones of the unseen monster. "Feast upon your face." Murphy remained frozen in place, listening to the words of the creature to which he would shortly belong if he failed to act. "Turn you around," continued the monstrous voice. "Bite off your face." Refusing to yield to the Dark One, the man in the faded jeans tore himself away from the grip of the claw and dashed forward like a man possessed, unmindful of the obstacles strewn about in the shade. Seeing light ahead, Murphy threw his quivering body headlong onto the highway beyond, basking in the dim light provided by the now waning sun. Shaking, with the inherent numbness of a child, the young man took a moment to collect himself and turned to survey the ghastly passage. Whatever had held him in its thrall had either vanished or was simply invisible in the darkness. Taking no chances, Murphy tightened his improvised mask and delved deeper into the remains of Garty. Before long, Murphy found himself striding along a wide road, at the end of which stood the great citadel. The orange sun to his rear dedicated all of its diminishing energy to lighting the vast structure. And what a structure it was! It was all but impossible to see the apex, obscured as it was by a group of gathering clouds. Nearing the tower, the young man saw that it hadn't a single window. It was composed of large black stones, lacking adornment of any kind, a titanic, imposing edifice, at the base of which a small, gothic archway housed its only entrance. The man in the black t-shirt approached the archway and studied the portals therein. A thick layer of chalky ash cloaked the surface of the old doors, but he paid the dust no mind as he grabbed the weathered handles and shoved the heavy doors open. A dark hall met Murphy's gaze, in which several tall candle holders housed burning church candles. The holders were arranged in such a way as to suggest a route by which to navigate the space. Ahead of him, the young man caught a glimpse of an undefined figure moving off into further gloom, beyond the glare of the dozen or so flames. He called after the shape, his voice reverberating infinitely throughout the giant hall, but the call went without reciprocation. Whatever was lurking out there would continue to lurk for the nonce. Weary of the draining atmosphere of Garty's ravaged streets, Murphy stepped into the unsettling hush of the hall proper, eager to pursue his goal. The young man removed his mask and crept forward, following the meandering path as marked by the candle holders. To his rear, he heard the double doors closing, either by their own volition or aided by the hands of something gloomy and unseen. Then whispers sounded from the pockets of darkness surrounding him, weird, sibilant murmurs lacking clarity. Undeterred, Murphy continued forward, ignoring the troubling sounds. The scene was quite surreal. A barefooted man, guided by flickering candles across a hall of indeterminate scale, hounded by the mutterings of hidden critters confined to the shade. The seeker of the box pressed forth, intently focused on the path ahead of him, before reaching an obstacle to overcome, a dead end marked by a small lamp. The dead end was, in fact, a great wall of vines, a surface riddled with accessible roots to which Murphy could grip and conceivably climb. But looking up, the young man saw nothing but darkness. The glare of the candlelight was very minimal indeed. Collecting the lamp at his feet, Murphy noted its unusual properties. It was about the size of an aluminium can, featherlight, and fitted with what appeared to be buckle loops at either end. Withdrawing the mask from his pocket, he used the material to tie the lamp to his head and was thus armed with a hands-free source of light. He gripped the vines tentatively, testing their rigor. The roots were firm. Tightening the lamp about his head, Murphy began his ascent. Slowly he climbed, but soon enough he was high above the giant hall, looking down at the meandering path below as marked by the candle holders. The incessant whispering that had troubled him pervaded the entirety of the space now, those incomprehensible voices seemingly ascending with him. Up he went, root by root, mindful of the lamp affixed to his head, careful to pause periodically to check its integrity. But the voices were closing in, and he became aware of presences in the darkness behind him, hundreds of unblinking eyes in the void, seeking him. In the periphery of his vision, Murphy saw terrifying shapes, ghostly silhouettes with claws for hands, dark ones, reminiscent of the thing that had accosted him in the murky alley. The proximity of these shadowy creatures served only to boost the young man's stamina, the translucent talons penetrating the circle of light surrounding him, his only protection from their deadly clutches. With every ounce of strength remaining him, he clung to the roots, driving himself ever upward towards salvation. Dark limb after dark limb sought Murphy's being, the cacophonous whispering intensified by a growing frustration, as the owners of those pitch-black appendages repeatedly failed to reach him. The seeker of the box was an automaton, relentless in his determination to elude the Dark Ones, sweat pouring from his brow. But this latter outcome of his efforts was working against him. The perspiration was loosening the grip of the headlamp. Frequently, he stopped to wipe the sweat away, hounded by innumerable claws, as he retightened the lamp. And there it was, just above him, an opening in the great wall of vines, a lighted corridor into which he dragged himself like a tiger in its death throes. A strident screeching ensued, issued by the defeated Dark Ones, incapable of following Murphy into the light. The man in the black t-shirt rolled onto his back, his heart galloping in his chest. He lay there in an apathetic daze, utterly wiped out by the horrifying ascent. Finally, having recovered somewhat, the young man climbed to his feet and approached the edge of the opening. Peering out into the gloom, he was no longer able to perceive the candlelit path below. How high had he climbed to reach his present location? He no longer sensed the Dark Ones, nor could he hear their ceaseless murmuring. The only sound that remained was the beating of his settling heart, interspersed with his quick breathing. Removing the lamp from his head, he tied it to his forearm and turned to survey the stone corridor in which he was standing. As had been the case below, a number of candle holders lined the passageway, host to flickering candles. The stone walls were entirely bare, guiding the eye of the observer towards another opening at the opposite end. Sensing the nearness of something mysterious and powerful, quite possibly the very thing he sought, Murphy crossed the corridor and discovered the entrance to a curious chamber. Was it an ancient bathhouse into which he strolled? The chamber was impressive in every sense of the word. A floor tiled in marble lay beneath his feet, enclosed by oddly frescoed pillars, with a still, dark pool at the center, surmounted by a domed, mosaiced ceiling. The chamber held a note of the grandiose, suggested by the nature of the frescoes, peculiar women in regal garb, their pompous heads held high. But it was the opalescent pool that called to the man in the black t-shirt, something that he sensed awaited him in its watery belly. Creeping along the cold tiles, Murphy's eyes remained fixed on the small pool. How still the water was, its mirror-like surface exhibiting a perfect reflection of the domed ceiling. So perfect was the image that the young man was unable to detect anything whatsoever beneath the surface. He approached the water's edge and got down onto his hands and knees, studying his reflection. A grubby face looked back at him, a mask of soot below a mound of unkempt hair. His journey thus far hadn't afforded him the opportunity to bathe. Perhaps the pool before him would allow him to do just that. The 31-year-old removed his clothes. Tentatively, he slipped into the water and was surprised to discover that it was warm, a bathhouse indeed. He wiped the soot from his face and rinsed his hair, losing himself for a moment in the calm of the pool. But Murphy wasn't alone in the opal waters. A vision returned to him, that of the experience he'd had during the tilting of the water body after leaving New Babylon. Out on the waters, he'd been unaccountably whisked away from that cascade scenario, finding himself on a raft, floating on tranquil seas. Beneath him, though, had lurked a frightful figure, a pale lady that had gripped the raft and pulled herself up before the vision promptly ceased. Had the vision been a glimpse of things to come? For now, there in the opalescent pool, Murphy beheld the onset of bubbles, immediately followed by thick strands of golden hair covered in tiny barnacles. The young man was frozen in place, could only watch as the face of the fearsome woman arose. But it wasn't the face of a monster the young man beheld. It was a beautiful face, extraordinarily so. The being's skin was damp and grey, but supple. Her eyes were wide and staring, but iridescent like soap bubbles. The curve of her jaw was exquisite, and her full, round lips were mesmerizing.
"You needn't be afraid of me, Jason,"
came the lady's voice, a low, sensual voice that penetrated the young man's gut.
"Look, I have that which you seek."
Murphy simply stared as the figure's bony arms emerged from the waters, her skeletal hands clutching the sought-after object, the little black box.
"He who came before you,"
she continued,
"is a hostile individual, incapable of performing the necessary act."
"The noble act?" the young man managed, his attention torn between the oddly compelling face of the mysterious lady and the object held out before her.
"Yes,"
she said.
"It is you who shall relieve Garty of its blight. It has always been you. And it is you who shall prevent the hostile one from crossing over. These are the reasons you were called here, Jason."
Mesmerized by the Lady of the Pool's words, Murphy nodded, finding himself floating towards her. "Who are you?" the young man ventured.
"I'm many things. The swinging pendulum, representative of good, evil, and the shades of grey between. I spoke to you in dreams. The box made it possible."
Murphy realized the significance of her words, as the lady with the perfect lips recited that strange verse he'd come to know as the path.
It's a dusty old thing, that memory, littered with weeds unseen. Over the hills, under the trees, there on the edge of a dream. Stray too far and you'll miss it. The thought it won't ever occur. To stray into wilds without reason, magnificent, the end of despair. Beyond the bridges of slumber, no Couth and her barnacled throne, fade into blackness and stroll by the light, close to the end of the line. And when awake once again by the starlight, look to the eye of the storm, but beware the path less travelled, for you might just forget who you are.
It's you, Murphy murmured. No Couth. The barnacled being nodded, proffering the little black box to the young man now floating before her.
Take it, Jason, and go forth,
she whispered, smiling reassuringly. And Murphy did just that. The seeker of the box hadn't given much thought to what might happen should he actually acquire it. Perhaps he believed he'd be forced to descend that awful wall of vines and brave the terrible streets of Garty once more. But he certainly hadn't expected the thing that occurred the moment he touched the strange object. The pool and his immediate surroundings instantaneously transformed. No longer was he face to face with the barnacled lady, but instead, Murphy found himself sitting in what appeared to be a storage space. Surrounding him were countless imperceptible shapes, presumably items of furniture concealed beneath dark sheets. The only light source was the lamp he'd found, sitting on top of his clothes beside him. Quickly dressing, he untied the material from the lamp and wrapped the little black box in it. Clutching the lamp, he took off across the cluttered room in search of a way out. Locating a dreary corridor, Murphy paused at the threshold. At the opposite end, silhouetted by a soft luminescence, stood a familiar figure, the man in the hat.
Hello? Hello?
The young man called. No response was forthcoming.
What do you want?
Murphy ventured. Still, no reply was elicited. But the keeper of the box sensed the stranger's intentions. Having been denied the mysterious object, the man in Murphy's midst was going to try to take it from him. Murphy took a tentative step backwards. The stranger took a step forward in kind, and that was all it required to provoke a reaction. The keeper of the box spun on his heel and took off running. Through the room of shapes he fled, ducking and diving at every turn, desperately seeking another way out. He heard the oncoming footfalls of the man in the hat, the distinctive tread of heavy boots on stone closing in at speed. Propelled by the item in his possession, Murphy sprinted with every ounce of his being and stumbled into another corridor, a passage uncannily similar to the one through which he had accessed the bathhouse. On he ran, noting the candle holders lining its bare walls. This was the corridor that had led to the bathhouse, which could mean only one thing. At the opposite end was a sudden drop-off, a plunge into the infested shadows of that giant hall below. A thunderous crash sounded to Murphy's rear as something toppled in the storage room. Splintering wood was heard as something else went the same way. Then the very walls about him began to shake, accompanied by a low rumble, suggestive of an earthquake. The young man continued to run until he saw the opening ahead of him, that yawning gulf from which he'd narrowly managed to escape with his life, and he was being pursued in its direction by the man in the hat, the citadel itself coming apart at the seams. The man in the black t-shirt was left with a simple choice, to jump or not to jump. Time slowed to a crawl as he neared that precipitous edge. The persistent footfalls of the man in the hat resembled the slow, rhythmic pounding of a failing heart, and the quake rocking the citadel he sensed in the back of his throat like a preface to throwing up. But Murphy's pace was that of a galloping horse. His great momentum left him with no choice whatsoever. Clutching the lamp in one hand and the bundled box in the other, he closed his eyes, let out an almighty scream, and leapt into absolute darkness.